Hey, this podcast is not kid friendly. So if you don't want your kid to hear about sex and the word shit and all that other stuff, you should probably get them out of the room right now.
Everybody has a secret.
This is Beyond the Secret, an anonymous podcast where I uncover the truth behind people's deepest secrets. My name is Ace Fanning, and I want to know,
what's your secret?
Welcome back to another week of Beyond the Secret. This is officially our second ever Secrets and Scandals episode, and we have a lot of things that we need to tell you before we talk about this case at all. And the first is, we are not professionals. We are completely biased. We are not journalists. We have done very minimal research.
We've watched a Dateline, a documentary special, and maybe listened to like half of two podcasts about it.
Well, no. We watch a Dateline. We watch a 2020. We listened to one full podcast, and then the other ones I was irritated by.
We watched that docuseries. It was like three parts.
Oh, yeah.
But it was like a year or two ago, so.
Yeah. So we're not the most educated people on this case. Now, Secrets and Scandals Episode 1, JonBenet Ramsey. There's a reason we started with that. We are experts at JonBenet Ramsey.
That one we know.
We know more than anyone else you will ever talk to. This one, middle of the road. We know some stuff, and some stuff we don't know.
But you can start here, and then you can research for yourself and watch some of the things that we watched.
And you need to know, we're completely biased. We think that this woman is innocent. I'm going to tell you that up front. We're not going to tell you any of the other side and what they believe. I mean, we kind of are going to do that, but we're going to argue all the points that we can. And just, yeah, so this is completely one-sided. Don't make your own assumptions off of this episode.
Yeah, do your own research, but we'll give you a place to start.
Yeah, and fun fact, my sister's neighbor, when she lived in Texas, became very, very close to this case and very close to this woman, and they would talk on the phone and write and yada yada yada, and I was actually going to ask her to be on this episode, and I think she was gonna do it, and then she kind of pulled out last minute so now you just get us. So that's just kind of like one of those things. I'm gonna deliver you some really great news and then kind of let you down. And she sent us a whole bunch of stuff on it, but I was like, ugh, this is way too much to read. So are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay, this is the case of Darlie Routier. If ever you've listened to any podcast that has covered this case, they all get super hyper-focused on the minute-by-minute timeline of events, and that is, I think, what puts me to sleep every fucking time. It's so hard to follow everything because it's not written out in front of you.
Yeah, the timeline makes it really hard if you're not seeing it written down on paper. Like, just trying to listen to it, it gets way too confusing.
So we're going to give you just a brief overview of what happened that night. And if you want, like, the insane details of everything, you can look it up. So on June 6, 1996, at 2:31 a.m., 911 gets a call from a woman who's frantically screaming that someone has broken into their home and stabbed her two children and her, and they ran out through the kitchen and out the garage. She said they were, you know, wearing dark clothing. She didn't get a good look at them. And, you know, that's basically what she tells them happened.
Yeah.
Okay, so later, you know, there's a whole lot more that happens after that. Her husband comes down. He finds her. The one son is dead pretty much as soon as people arrive. The other son dies on the way to the hospital.
Yeah, he's still breathing. The dad says, like, in something that he tried to give him CPR and, like, the air was just coming out of his chest, which is, like, so horrible to think about.
There's another child, Drake. So Devin is the six-year-old, Damon is the five-year-old, and then Drake is the seven-month-old baby. He and his dad, Darren, were both asleep upstairs when all of this happened. Darlie, Devin, and Damon, which it's like, do we really have to fucking do this? The D, every single name is D. Like, we got Darley, Darren, Devin, Damon, Drake, like, as if it's not fucking confusing enough to follow this story. Everyone has the same goddamn name. So, Devin, Damon, and Darley were all asleep downstairs in the living room.
Yeah, she said, I know people are like, why were they sleeping in the living room? But people, I guess the boys wanted to, like, stay up and watch a movie or something, and she hadn't been getting a lot of sleep with the 7-month-old baby, so she decided, like, I'm just going to sleep downstairs tonight, take a break from being with the baby. The dad was going to watch him, and so that's why she was sleeping downstairs with the kids.
The other thing that I did hear on one of the podcasts that they mentioned is that there was word going around that Darley and Darren's marriage wasn't doing so hot at the time, and that was also part of why she was sleeping downstairs. But again, everything is conflicting on what you hear. So basically what we want to do is we want to talk to you about things that we want you to think about, and then the things of, you know, why people think that she is guilty. So the first thing that I think that everyone has to take into consideration is that the wrongful conviction amount in Texas. So Texas is the state with the highest number of prisoners found to be innocent following DNA testing, according to the Innocence Project, which is a national organization working to exonerate wrongfully convicted people. That's a big deal.
Yeah.
Like, if, you know, this woman is sitting here and she is, for all these years, she's been saying, I'm innocent. For over 2 decades, I'm innocent. She's never broken that. And, you know, she happens to live in the state that has the most wrongfully convicted people.
And I guess we should go back and say that they lived in Rowlett, Texas. Oh, this is where all this took place.
That's probably an important thing to mention. Good God.
Like we said, it's going to be scattered.
We're a fucking shit show. Okay, so the other thing that you have to remember is the timing of all of this. So this is June 6, 1996. And in October of 1994, a woman named Susan Smith killed her 2 kids by strapping them into the car and pushing her car into the lake. For 9 days, people searched high and low for her kids and this person who supposedly had kidnapped them before she finally came clean because she killed them, saying basically her boyfriend didn't want to be with her because of her kids. And she was convicted on July 22nd, 1995. The reason I think this is important is just because this tells you about where people's minds were at.
Yeah, people were already thinking, like, about someone who had killed their kids because her boyfriend didn't want to be with kids. And that kind of leads us into, like, the main reason that people, like, think that Darley maybe could have done this is because she was, like, a fun, loving young mom, and they think that, like, she just wanted to party or have a different lifestyle than this.
Yeah, and literally, like, if you listen to most of what is reported on this case, it's like, you know, they talk about, oh, why, you know, what about this woman made you think, like, she could kill her kids? And number one, she had a lavish lifestyle, but it was like they were doing well. Like,
yeah.
So Darren had a technology business and it was doing well for a while. And then they kind of had a dip in income. And basically what happened was, you know, they kind of kept spending money when they didn't have it. And a lot of people, like, honed in on this.
But they were also young. I mean, she was 26 years old and she already had 3 kids. Like, I think that they weren't used to the money and stuff, but I don't think that was a reason why she wanted to, like, you know, kill her kids.
Well, and I also think, too, is, like, a lot of times when finances with couples go bad, like, he's the main breadwinner, he's self-employed, like, how do we even know that she really knew how bad the money troubles were?
It's totally true, and, like, they were living in a big house at the time, and people just think just because their lifestyle was lavish and they were, you know, had fancy things that made her a bad person.
Yeah, so Darley had big fake tits, bleach blonde hair, and she chewed gum in kind of an annoying way. And if you listen to, like, on the 2020, on the Dateline, on all the podcasts we listen to, they bring this up. Like, if you bleach your hair, you probably want to kill your children. She had fake tits, and it's like, I know, like, it's 1996, and not a lot of people are talking about their breast enhancements, but, like, it happens. to this day, like, I feel like more people I know than not have fake boobs.
Exactly. I think they just kind of pinpointed her as, like, the fun, flirty mom, the life of the party, you know, like, she just wanted to have fun rather than be with her kids. But that was never really, like, I mean, other people said she was a great mom and all this stuff, so.
Everyone who knew her said she was a great mom. No one was like, oh, she's such a neglectful mom, she ignores her children. It was just like,
just because you have a big personality and are fun doesn't mean that you want to hurt your kids.
Yeah. And I was telling Caitlin this, like, yesterday. I was like, okay, if Caitlin was murdered, morbid thought, but if Caitlin got murdered, you know, if they looked at me and stuff, they'd be like, oh, he was so attention-seeking. Yeah, that is 100% true. I'm, like, always seeking attention. They would say, he talked to hundreds of women a day. Which is also true. My DMs are always blowing up from women who follow me, and we're not sexting, but like, I am talking to hundreds of women a day.
Yeah.
And you know what? Like, I try to get people to think about this because it's like,
they pick up on, like, things that they don't really have the right context. Like, they would just use that against people. Like, yeah. Just like they used her big personality against her.
I had chin liposuction. Like, I could imagine them being like, oh, he cared more about his appearance than
so he had wife. To murder his wife.
Yeah, it's just like, if you think about it like that, it's like, oh, shit, that is a kind of shitty thing. Like, I have learned from all of this, as someone who is, I guess, considered media, don't trust the media with anything that they say.
Yeah.
Because they try to always spin something. Okay, so let's go through everything that we think. Oh, we need to add something. So, you know, we go through this whole case. There's all this stuff that comes up. And I want you to know this in case you turn it off. At the end of all this, that Darlie was convicted of murdering Damon, one of her sons, and was sentenced to death by lethal injection. The reason they she's only charged with one death was because prosecutors said, like, if we lose on this one, then we still have another kid that we can try her on. That way they could avoid double jeopardy of trying to, like, convict her on the other one.
Yeah. So she's currently in jail awaiting death.
Yeah. But it's on hold currently because they're trying to appeal her case, and I'm pretty sure she's working with the Innocence Project of Texas.
Yes, they're retrying some DNA that was found with the new technology and all that stuff. So she could be put to death anytime, but right now it's on hold, so.
So let's go through some of the things that people think make Darlie guilty.
Okay.
The first one is people are saying, oh, well, she didn't die. These are self-inflicted wounds. That's like everyone wants to say these are they're like flesh wounds, they're self-inflicted. She just did this to herself to try and cover up.
But her wounds were a slit across her throat. I guess it was like millimeters away from her carotid artery.
No, it was 1 to 2 millimeters shallow of cutting that artery. And that, like, if people don't know how big that is, literally if you take like a regular number 2 pencil and like draw the smallest line that you can with that is 1 millimeter. 2 millimeters would be like the thickness of a crayon.
Yeah. So like, and the crime scene pictures, if you look them up, there's pictures of all her bruising and cuts and stuff. And she was rushed right into surgery when she went in the ambulance and went to hospital. And so, but her bruising and stuff, it just doesn't seem like, I mean, it seems hard to give yourself all these bruises.
Well, that's the thing. So when she came into the hospital, the bruising wasn't there. But if you've ever had a bruise, then you know that it takes a long time for the bruising to show up.
Yeah.
She came into the hospital and she didn't have these bruising. It was like a few days later that the bruises showed up and
were like from her armpit, like all the way down her arm.
It was
like,
huge.
It was a lot of bruising and like,
her entire arm was like black and blue.
Yeah.
And they were saying she did this to herself to try and, you know, lead us in a different direction.
Yeah. But I don't know. I just think slitting your throat, like, is pretty scary to do, especially to yourself if you're just trying to, like, cover up so it makes it look like someone hurt you, too. I think I would, like, try to stab other parts of my body before I do my throat.
But. Well, I think whoever did that to her probably thought, oh, perfect, she'll die. Like, yeah. I got her right in the perfect spot, she's gonna die. No there need was, to waste time here, I can get out of here.
And there was also something that she was wearing a necklace, so it kind of hit the necklace, which maybe was what stopped it from going deeper, so.
So, if someone tells you that her wounds were self-inflicted, they're a fucking dumbass. Number two is, a lot of people hone in on the fact that her story keeps changing. And this one really, really bothers me. Because she was asleep. So imagine any time that you've woken up, like how out of it you are at fucking 2 a.m. You're woken up and this whole chaotic scene is going on. Like, it wouldn't shock me if her story changed from the first time she told it to the second time, because she's going to start remembering things differently.
And she was interviewed, like, I think 4 times or something, 4 different interview times. And she said, like, after she got out of the hospital, like, the next morning, she was saying, like, she can't really remember what happened. Like, the trauma was so much. I mean, imagine seeing 2 of your kids stabbed. Like, she couldn't fully remember everything that happened, which I think is totally, like, I understand that.
So then what happened was that, you know, they start searching the house and they're looking for, okay, if someone did come in, how did they come in? And what they find is that in the garage, the screen that goes over the window has been cut. And they think that what they did is they came through the screen, then through the garage door, and entered the home. And what they say is that the mulch underneath the window, and like, if this is not fucking JonBenet Ramsey all over again, they say that the mulch under the window was undisturbed, and that if it's undisturbed, then that means no one actually climbed through that window. But there's no mulch under the window. You can look up the video of her husband, you know, showing people that window, and there's no mulch under it.
Yeah, he demonstrated how he could get out without disturbing anything.
Well, because there was nothing there. The mulch was like 3 feet over. Directly underneath that window was concrete. So that's what's, like, super frustrating is, like, they put this stuff out there, and then people are like, ugh, yeah, the mulch.
Yeah, people believe it.
So that mulch never existed. Then they said, well, why would someone who's breaking into a house cut the screen? Why wouldn't you just remove it? I'm going to tell you right now, I have tried to remove those goddamn screens before. It is not easy.
No.
On our house, like, in this new house that we have, we got, like, the, what are they called? Like, the bug screens?
Yeah.
And they are so incredibly difficult to get off. I would rather just cut through it.
Yeah, especially if you're in a hurry and you were trying to get in. I mean.
Yeah. And I think, too, like, you know, if I had to pull that off, I'm going to make more noise. I would rather just cut it.
Yeah.
Okay. So then they say that, this is the one that really, really pisses me off is, you know, the Routiers said constantly, oh, you know, we lock all the doors. And they're like, well, how did they get in through the garage? Because they said, well, we never locked the garage door. And they said, if you lock both your doors, why would you not lock your garage door?
I think most people in America don't lock their garage door. I grew up with parents never locking the garage door.
My parents never locked the garage door. Yeah,
I feel like it's just
Garage door is locked because we literally never use that door. We can't, like, when we pull our cars in, we can't even get to our garage door, so I just keep it locked.
It's a weird setup, but we just come in through our front door. But, I mean, it's just, I think most people don't lock that door.
No!
Especially because if you pull into your garage and you forget your house key, like, you usually have a garage door opener, but you don't always have a key with you, and you go in through the garage.
Yeah, I think that was the dumbest thing I have ever heard in my life. Okay, so then the next part that they focus on, I don't know where to go with this. There's so much. Which part?
The bread knife.
Okay. So then what they do is, you know, they go through the house, they collect all the evidence, and what they say is that there's this bread knife in the house, and it's in the kitchen, and that when they collect evidence, or when they bring it into evidence and stuff, they find that it has the same fibers on that bread knife that was consistent with the fibers that made up the window screen. But here's a really important thing to remember. They fingerprinted the window screen and, like, the all that area, and then they fingerprinted the the butter bread knife. The bread knife.
Okay.
And then what they said is, so, like, that's completely open to cross-contamination. If they use the same fingerprint brush to wipe down the area around the window, they could have picked up, you know, tiny little particles of the window screen and then transferred them onto the bread knife.
Yeah. So basically they're thinking that she grabbed the bread knife and cut the screen from the inside, but because of that, but really it could have just all been messed up and it maybe probably wasn't even that knife that cut the window.
Yeah. There was never anything, like they were never able to prove that they didn't use the same fingerprint brush on both of those items. So cross-contamination. And when I was reading and kind of researching, is someone said they should have checked all of that stuff and made sure that none of those particles were on anything else, but they never did that.
Yeah.
They just said, this knife does have it. And that's important to remember. Like, when you think about these wrongful conviction stuff is, you know, what they tell you is, oh, we found this here. And that then what you think is like, oh, well, for sure, if it's on there. But they never, you know, went as far as to say that those particles were not found on anything else.
And I think it's important, too, to mention, like, all the big cases, there's, like, one common factor is that they're all, like, the crime scene was contaminated, they didn't secure things right, they didn't properly dust for prints, all these things is always what's the issue, because they can't prove whether, like, it really happened or not, because it wasn't done right.
Next piece of evidence that, you know, everyone gets their panties in a twist about is, so, in the kitchen floor, there was blood on the floor, and then on top of the blood was glass. That glass did not have any blood on top of it. And they're saying, so, she bled, and then what they're basically trying to say is she bled because she had stabbed her kids, and then she tried to make it look like a scene had happened, so she broke a bunch of glass on top of that. But here's something I want you to think about. Again, I'm fully saying, like, I'm biased and I'm giving you one-sided information, but at least hopefully it's making you think so that when you go and you listen to these other things on this case, you're like, hey, I have a little bit of background info. So you think about it. Let's, you know, we have two children. One is dead and one is dying on the floor. We have a woman with a slash across her neck. Emergency people are going to be coming into that house quickly. They're not going to care about disturbing the scene. So let's say a paramedic wearing his, you know, big paramedic boots that they wear comes in, steps on a piece of glass and breaks it even more and sends that glass shattering even more than it was. And that disperses glass into the kitchen even more.
Yeah.
That happens.
And I feel like they said it was, like, one glass was broken or something. So it's not like there was, like, a bunch of glasses all on top. Like, it's, like, one shattered thing. So it just seems hard to say for sure that, like, she stepped there first and then that went there.
Yeah. They can't prove it. All they can say is that there was glass or that there was blood underneath this glass. And then on top of this glass, there was no blood. But we don't know when did that glass get on top of that blood. There's just tons of people coming in and out of the house. So I just think it's important that you think about that. Okay, the other thing was that nothing was stolen in the house and jewelry was sitting out everywhere. Like there was 10 gold rings like on the kitchen counter and there was necklaces and watches, like, but they didn't steal anything. And a lot of people have a hard time with that because what they're saying is like, you know, if you were breaking in,
it was probably, like, a botched robbery is what they think. But then if they didn't steal anything, then it wasn't that.
Yeah. But first of all, why do we think that when you would come into the house, we don't know who did this. How do we know that someone didn't have it out for her husband? How do we know that someone didn't have it out for her? Like,
how do we know it wasn't just some crazy serial killer who wanted to kill people and not steal their stuff?
Which I want to point this out to you. I want you to pay attention to the fact that this is a total fucking side note, and you're probably going to think that's a really stupid thing to think about. But this murder happened on June 6, 1996. 6-6-96. You know, 666 represents the devil, and I don't know, but I know that there are fucking crazy people in the world. is to say that there wasn't, you know, everyone's always like, oh, well, when you're murdered by someone you know or whatever. But, like, how do we know that people weren't like, oh, this Christian Texas family, we want to sacrifice them for our satanic cult or something like that? I'm not saying that that happened, but I'm saying that the date is really, really weird to me. And I had never noticed that until right before we started this podcast. And I was like, 6-6, and then there's another 6 in there.
That is true.
That's weird. It's kind of weird.
I'm sure it's just coincidence, but you never know.
It could be, but it still puts, like, a thought in my head. So we don't know if they were after jewelry. We don't know if they were just going in and, you know, trying to kill people to honor the devil. I don't know, but I just want you to think about it. Okay, so then there's something that I want to add, and I feel like this is the perfect time to add it, is I feel like pretty quickly they focus their attention on Darlie.
Yeah.
You know, her husband was upstairs and
they really focus no attention on him. They kind of clear him right away.
But, and this didn't come out until after she was convicted. And when I read this one article that he was in, the quote that he said just drove me insane. But a few months, was it a few months? I'm trying to find my notes. Okay, so I don't know when it was. I think it was a few months before this. You know, the Routiers were having money issues. And apparently what happened was Darren had set up, he was setting out to set up this insurance scam where basically he was going to have people come and do a home robbery or steal their cars or something. So that way he could claim the insurance money to, you know, help pay their bills for a little while they tried to get back on their feet. But that never came out until after she was convicted. And what he said in this interview is he said, you know, I believe her, but I wasn't willing to risk my life to save hers or something. Don't quote me. The whole time that I say anything, don't quote me on anything. But it was something along those lines. Like, he didn't want this to get out because he knew that if police found out about this, that puts a huge suspicion on this man.
Yeah.
So who's to say that he didn't, you know, set this up in the first place?
Exactly. Or it could have been from the first setup and the people were mad that they never got the money from him or something like that. Like, it just, people who are setting out to do insurance scams and set people up to rob them or something, who knows what else he's doing and what else he could set up.
Like, I've never thought about doing that before. I've never been like, oh, you know what? I'm in a hard place. Why don't I stage a home robbery and think, oh, I could get an extra 20, 30 grand or whatever.
Yeah.
No one does that. Like, that's a pretty fucked up person. And then not to disclose that.
Yeah.
Because if he had disclosed that, that then gives at least some sort of motive for somebody else. But he was just trying to save his own ass. So, I don't know. I think that makes him really sketchy in my book.
Yeah. And he used to say he wasn't trying to set something up to kill her to claim her insurance money.
Yeah. And, okay, so then one of the other things that people really focus on is the fact that, yes, they're having these money troubles and the children had a life insurance policy. Each kid had $5,000 worth if they were to die.
Yeah.
$5,000 doesn't even cover funeral expenses. So you're telling me this woman was like, oh, we could get an extra $10,000 if I kill both of these kids. Perfect. We'll be set for life. No, 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 no. This is the dumbest theory I have ever heard in my entire life. If she wanted to kill somebody to try and, you know, change her financial situation because people are so focused on, oh, she loves a lavish lifestyle. She loves to spend money, yada, yada. Fucking kill Darren because his life insurance policy totaled $800,000. That's more money I'm talking about.
Yeah, that's a lot more than the $10,000 and losing your kids. I mean, you'd have to lose your husband, but
ugh, who cares? Or, you know, some people are like, oh, you know, she was so stressed out with her kids and they were ruining her lifestyle and she didn't want to be a mom anymore. Then, like, I'm not trying to be morbid, but, like, kill the 7-month-old baby because that baby needs all of your fucking attention.
Well, and I just think if the reasoning is that she didn't want kids and she wanted a different lifestyle, wouldn't you think she'd like, as horrible as it sounds, wouldn't she kill all the kids? Like, why'd she just leave one?
Yeah. And the one who's, like, the most needy. I don't know. I think that's a crazy... I think that's the dumbest theory of all the theories that I've heard, is that she killed them for that $10,000.
Yeah.
Makes a big difference. Then we find this diary entry that she did. And in her diary, she wrote, "I hope that one day you will forgive me for what I'm about to do. My life has been such a hard fight for a long time, and I just can't find the strength to keep fighting anymore." And they were like, that's it. She was admitting that she was getting ready to kill her kids.
Yeah, and I think this was written like a month or two before, right? Or yeah. Like a few weeks before.
That's called a suicide note. That's not confessing to the fact that you have killed your children. And hello, her baby is 7 months old. If we have learned anything on this podcast, or you haven't learned, go listen to the postpartum psychosis episode. Postpartum is real. Like, she was probably struggling with postpartum.
Yeah.
That's what that sounds like to me.
And I fully believe, I don't think she did this, but I think if there's any reason that she did this, it was like a psychotic break, like from postpartum or something like that. But this is never anyone's theory. So I'm thinking that that's probably not what it is, because they probably, during all the interviews and stuff, I would think that they would have led to something about that.
No. And that, I don't think this was, you know, a postpartum episode or anything like that. I just think they're using this diary entry to try and, you know, cast a doubt on her as a person. It's just, it's so fucking stupid. Okay, so then there's a few things that happen that, like, people cannot get over. The first one is that she tells police and the 911 operator both that she has touched the knife and she could have ruined the fingerprints on it.
She didn't say it out of nowhere, though. She said the guy ran out through the garage. He dropped the knife in the utility room right before the garage. And then the 911 operator says, "Don't touch anything. Like, you can't touch anything in the crime scene." And she says, "I already touched the knife. Did I ruin the fingerprints?" Like, she's thinking it because they said something. Not, she didn't just call 911 and be like, "My kids are dead and I touched the knife." Like,
yeah,
it wasn't like that.
No, and it's, people get so focused on this because, like, any time that we hear someone being like, "No, like, my fingerprints could be on it," it's like, we know what that means. But literally, the 911 operator, like, scared the shit out of her probably in her state of shock and was like, "Don't touch anything."
And she was like, "I already picked the knife up," because she ran after the guy going out the garage but didn't catch him. And then when she, like, turned around, she picked the knife up and put it on the counter or something.
And people are like, "No, your kids are bleeding out on the floor. Why are you touching the knife?" Well, let's remember, she has three small boys. Boys are psychopaths. And probably just out of regular instinct, if you see a knife on the ground, you're going to pick it up to make sure nobody picks it up or nobody trips on it or steps on it or plays with it or whatever. Like, I'm chalking that up to mom instinct. Like, yeah, if, you know, yes, all this is going on, but just out of natural instinct, she grabbed the knife and put it on the counter.
And, like, you're in a traumatic situation. And also, like, I know her kids are bleeding and dying and stuff, and people think, like, why'd she even run after the guy? But I think it's just probably your instinct to, like, see, try and catch them. And if you think they killed your kids, you'd probably try to see who they were.
Again, she was asleep when all of this started happening.
She woke up in a very frantic state.
Yeah. Have you ever, like, been scared out of your sleep and, like,
jump up and run?
Like, yeah, like, you gotta try and explain that. Like, I don't know. That part also drives me nuts. Oh, but then, my least favorite part of this whole case, and, like, the part that, like, just pisses me off to no end, is on June 14th, Devin would have turned 7 years old. And Darlie and Darren and their family all said, "We don't want his... We've been crying so much." This is 8 days after the murder. They're like, "We have been crying nonstop. We had the, you know, the memorial service, and they were just crying their eyes out at that." They said, "We want his birthday to still be a happy day." So they go to the cemetery. They bring silly string because her boys love silly string. They bring balloons and they're laughing and having fun at the cemetery. And news outlets picked this up and they shared it. And I will tell you right now, this is why this woman is on death row.
Yeah, because they're saying she's like celebrating and she doesn't look sad. But there was video footage of the memorial service 2 hours before this where they were devastated and crying. And it's they don't show that, though. They only showed like the jury, the silly string video.
Yeah. And it's so frustrating because it's like, I understand that. Like, you know, when you have cried so much about something and then you're like, oh, I'm so sick of crying. Like, let's just have a fun moment. And this is the last birthday of her son that she can really celebrate. Like, yes, he is dead, but, like, it's still so recent. Like, you can't process that. And she'd had the birthday party already planned. Like, they had sent out the invites to friends and everything before all this happened. And they were like, let's just make this a happy moment. And it makes me so angry that people took this moment and tried to turn it into something else.
And it wasn't just her. It was the whole family. Plus, like, it was, like, her sister, her family members, and I think some close friends. So, like,
but all the zoom-ins are on her.
Yeah.
It zooms in on her smiling and doing silly string and all this shit. And it's like, are you fucking... Like, people are so fucking stupid. That's what I think about that. I feel bad. I feel so bad for this woman that they took this moment that was so personal and so private and they turned it into something negative. And I totally understand why she did it.
Yeah. And I just think by not showing them, like, the full video and only showing this, making it look like she just randomly went and had a party, like, that's definitely swaying the jury, like, the wrong way.
Okay, so those are kind of, like, our main points for why people think that she is guilty.
Yeah.
But I'm going to mention some things that a lot of people try to keep out, and I think that it's important to think about. And the first one is that the neighbor, a woman named Karen Neal, testified that she had seen a strange car several times driving slowly around the neighborhood, particularly in the alleyway behind the Routier's house and around the corner from the Routier's house, several days leading up to the murder.
Yeah, and she had thought it was strange, so she was, like, watching it.
And here's the thing. People are always like, well, what do you mean, like, a strange car? Like, okay, maybe if you don't work from home or you're not home all day, you don't know what cars are coming and going. But, like, literally right now, my office, my desk looks out a front window, and I look at every single car that goes by.
We would notice if a car was circling the street or standing in front of someone's house, like, watching them. Like, we know which cars live on our street and when people come and go. And I think
when our neighbors had their bug people come, like, 4 days in a row. I have, at my desk, I literally have a mirror that faces me but goes out, like, the window. So I can also see the cul-de-sac at the end of our street. And I'll see, like, if a car goes down there, turns around, and comes back, I immediately get up, like, what are they doing? I mean, I'm a psychopath. But if this woman saw this enough to think about it and think that it was weird, it probably happened a lot. And there was no mention of seeing the car after the murder. There was no follow-up of, like, hey, you know, we had this murder happen, and have you seen that car anymore? Like, no one went back, interviewed her for that. But she did testify that there was a strange car, a black car, driving around the neighborhood, and it stuck out to her.
Yeah, she was watching it for a reason.
Something that you would maybe want to follow up on. But I think because they had such a hard-on for Darlie, they didn't focus anywhere else. That was their only focus, was this woman, she did this, we're going to make sure that she gets put away for this. Okay, so the other thing that, you know, people like to talk about is the blood splatter on the clothing. People are like, oh, well, you know, she has blood splatter on her shoulder. How would she get that? And yada, yada, yada. But here's the deal. And this is something people don't talk about. Is when she was taken by the paramedics, they had to cut her shirt off of her. They took that shirt. You know, they crumpled it up. They leave it. They put it in a bag. But they normally, when you take clothes off of, like, a possible suspect or victim or whatever, you're supposed to dry the clothes completely and then store them. So that way the blood isn't being transferred. So let's say they take this shirt off of her. They put it into a bag. there's still wet blood on it, that blood is going to get all over the shirt. You know? You can't lay a shirt perfectly flat. So we don't know if that's blood splatter on there.
Yeah, because they were saying that, like, she stood over her kids and stabbed them, and the blood, like, flew up and over her, onto her back.
Yeah, and they don't, they have no idea that this happened or not because of the way that they collected the evidence.
And I also think they were all sleeping close together, so, like, who knows, like, how far any blood can fly or anything like that.
Yeah, the living room had, like, two couches on it, and she was sleeping on one of the couches, and I think the boys were sleeping on the floor, like...
Right there.
Yeah. So, again, who knows? Okay, my favorite thing ever of this entire case is this fucking sock. So... there is a sock found, like, three or four houses down from the Routier's house that has blood from both boys on it, and it is left in the alleyway, like, right next to a gutter. Like, there's this sock sitting there, and it's right next to a gutter, and what I want to believe... So, here's the thing. What they're saying is, she stabbed her kids, then she takes this sock, runs down the street at 2 a.m... plants the sock there so that people are like, oh my God, like, for sure the person ran this way and that is why, you know, that she's trying to basically put them off. And you're really telling me. So let's go through a few of the scenarios. Let's say that this was, you know, a fit of rage because of postpartum situation. Notice the word fit of rage. When you're in a fit of rage, you can't think about, like, oh, I'm going to take this sock and I'm going to plant it. You know, her blood is not found on the sock. Just the two boys are.
Yeah.
And if she really stabbed herself, she would have blood. There would have been blood dripping all the way down the street. She would have planted it and then blood all the way back, you know, unless, you know, they're saying that she stabbed them, then planted the sock, then came back and stabbed herself.
Yeah. But it just seems far-fetched to, like, if it was planned, like, that, even a planned murder, that seems like a lot of work. Like, anyone could have seen you. Yeah, it was 2 a.m, but you never know what your neighbors are doing or if there's a car driving by, and it just seems like...
That's ballsy.
Yeah.
It is super ballsy to go out with this sock. And also, I don't know. I feel like as soon as I heard about the sock, I was just like, she didn't do it. And again... I'm completely biased on this entire case. I'm telling you all. I'm not telling you everything. I'm just telling you the points that help make my case. But that sock is a really hard fucking explanation to make. Okay. Other things to think about is that when Darlie was brought in, a psychiatrist interviewed Darlie for 14 hours, and he said that he believed her to telling the truth. So if you think about, you know, making a murderer and Brendan Dassey, and everyone was like all up in arms about, you know, he was, and I get it, it's a psychiatrist and it's not, you know, a police trying to get a confession out of her, but Brendan Dassey was interviewed for 4 hours. She was interviewed for 14 by a psychiatrist. And I don't know. I think after 14 hours with someone, you'd be picking up on something.
Yeah, it seems like you'd sort of know. And I think psychiatrists, too, are probably pretty good at reading people.
I would think.
Yeah.
And again, like, let's remember, too, like, Darlie is... I don't mean this in a mean way, but I don't think she's the most educated girl on the block. You know, she's not some master manipulator and stuff like this. What people said about her is, you know, she's the party girl, she's the fun girl. No one ever said, like, oh, Darlie is the smartest, most manipulative person I've ever met. You know? I think that's a really crazy thing, that if a psychiatrist can spend 14 hours with you and come out and say, you know, I believe that she's telling the truth. I'm not saying, like, that's all the evidence you need, but I'm saying that is a big deal.
Yeah, that is a big deal.
Okay, so then we get to the trial, and they can't hold this trial in Dallas, Texas, because of all the publicity that this case has gotten. Instead, they have to move it down to Kerrville, Texas, which is Kerr County, and Kerr County is a very, very conservative county, like, very conservative. So you're bringing in this bleach blonde woman with her big tits and her big personality, immediately they're not liking her.
Yeah, they're judging her from the start.
And I couldn't find this anywhere, and I was like, I really wish I could find this in writing somewhere, and I could only, the only place I found it was in the one podcast we listened to, but I also couldn't remember which podcast that was. It was a guy, though. And, you know, Darlie got this attorney named Doug Mulder, and it is said that at one point in his life, Doug Mulder had said, if ever I'm, you know, accused of murder, just don't let me be tried in Kerr County. So why would her attorney, you know, when they're stating like, okay, we have to move this out of Dallas, and they say, let's move it to Kerr County, why would he not like protest that or like be like, no, we can't have it in Kerr County. We have to go somewhere else. There's a lot of talk about Doug Mulder and the fact that they paid him a shit ton of money and he was not a very good attorney for her. He was a great attorney in Dallas. Like, everyone knew about him and he had this great reputation, which is why they hired him. And there's a lot of talk about how well of a job he did. And that's one of the biggest things is if he really had ever said, you know, if ever I'm accused of murder, don't try me in Kerr County. And then her case fucking ends up in Kerr County. Like, that's really fucking shitty.
Yeah.
Okay, so then, after the case and everything, you know, the people, they're trying to appeal her case and stuff. They find out that the court transcriber had 18,000 mistakes. Which, like, what we learned is that a lot of court transcribers make mistakes, but like maybe 1,000 to 2,000 mistakes in a case. I think that literally sounds like the worst job of all time.
Yeah. So she made 18,000 mistakes. They found out, like, after they found all this out, they fined her $32,000 for all the mistakes, which just shows you, like, and she had lost her license. So, like, that was a big mess up. So they had to, like, rehire someone else to go through all the audio tapes and redo all this court transcribing.
Because if without the transcriptions, like, they can't, they, it's hard to redo the case because it's almost as though a case never, like, this court trial never existed.
Yeah, and I know when they went back to try and, like, retranscribe it all, like, the woman who originally did it had, like, lost some of the tapes, too. So they had to, like, redo it, plus they were missing some of it. So it makes it really hard to go back.
Next thing, Darren, her husband, has always maintained that he believed Darlie was innocent. She's in jail. She's on death row. She's going to get lethal injection. It's not going to hurt anything if he's like, you know, I kind of always thought maybe she did it. He has always said that she didn't. And is he saying that because he did have a hand in this and he was trying to kill her for the insurance money and the killers came in, they killed their kids by accident? I don't know. Or is he saying this because he truly believes her? Like,
but I just think, like, if he's going to stand by her for all this time and say she didn't do it, like, he knows her better than anyone. So, like, you'd think if he had any inkling that she did this, and especially if she did this and he had no clue about it, like, those are his kids, too. And if he thinks she did it, like, you'd probably eventually turn on her.
And people love to focus on the fact that Darren and Darlie got divorced in 2011. But that means that they stayed together. They stayed married for 15 years after the murder.
Yeah, and eventually, at some point, I mean, he thinks she's going to be put to death and she's in jail all this time. Like, I read something that said he just felt like they had to end this state of limbo they were in because he couldn't really have a full relationship with her while she's in jail. So eventually they just divorced. And I know that the son, who's now in his 20s, I think, that was the baby at the time, like, he has a relationship with her. He doesn't believe she did it. Like, he was 7 months at the time, so it's not like he would know. But, I mean, I would think that if the dad or him thought anything, they wouldn't carry on these relationships with her.
If I was ever put on death row, gonna get lethal injection, would you divorce me?
I don't know. I mean, 15 years after, you stayed with her pretty long.
You can divorce
me. Eventually, like, you have to move on with your life.
I know. You can divorce me. I don't think that that's a negative thing, but people are like, why did he divorce her?
Yeah, and he still says they're on good terms and everything. He just, like, couldn't live like that
for any longer. Okay. Other huge things that maybe people should be talking more about is there was a bloody fingerprint on the glass table, and a bloody fingerprint on the garage door. And those fingerprints, they could not match. They could not get to match anybody else in the family.
Yeah.
Now, here's where it gets a little bit tricky, is because it's a bloody fingerprint, were they not able to match it to anybody anywhere? Or were they just not able to match it? Again, everything is so blah. Like, you can't find specifics of what you're looking for. But if you collected that fingerprint and you put it into testing, it doesn't match anyone in the family. It seems like a pretty...
Yeah, and this is what they're currently retesting, is these fingerprints. So they're hoping with, like, all the new technology and new people in the database and all that stuff that they... That's what they're hoping to retry, is these bloody fingerprints.
Did it say that on the internet? Is that just what she told us?
No, I think it said it on the internet.
Okay, I was going to give you guys exclusive content. but yeah, so they are testing those again. That's a huge thing! Fucking fingerprints that aren't connected to anyone.
Yeah, and it's taken so long to, like, get this evidence to be tested again. So, like, it's all been in limbo for so long, but they've been trying to retest these for a long time, but they've finally just got it approved. So that's what she's currently, like, on hold for death row, is until they get the test back from these fingerprints.
Oh, the other really annoying thing about this case is they can't, you know, they asked Darlie, were you sexually violated in any way during the attack? And she's like, I don't know. I don't remember. And they're like, what do you mean you don't remember? You would remember if someone was attacking you, and yada, yada, yada. And there's a pube. That's such a gross word. There is a pube in the living room that doesn't belong to anybody in the family. You know, I don't know if the pube got there because Uncle Earl was over and scratching his balls and the pube fell out, or if it's the killers or what. But, like, again, there's so many, like, unanswered questions with this. That it's so hard to say she did it when there's so many things that are just not answered. Okay, the last thing that I think is really important is that Darlie voluntarily agreed to 4 interviews with police. And halfway through the 4th is when they arrested her. Like, they got the warrant and they came in and they busted and they were like, we're putting you under arrest and yada, yada, yada. Now, let's go back to the Ramseys. The Ramseys never once did an interview with police. Not one. The only time they did interviews was with the media. And they said, they told the police, they said, the only way that we would agree to an interview with you is if you would give us all the questions ahead of time and we can, like, write out our statements. What the fuck is that? She agreed to 4 interviews with them. I think if you're a guilty person, you don't have to do these interviews. I'd be like, no, I'm not doing that.
Yeah, I think usually guilty people try to avoid it. I don't think they voluntarily do 4 right away, right after they have gone through all this stuff.
Yeah. So, that's that. Currently, she's on death row, sentenced to death by lethal injection, and I don't know. I don't think this woman did it.
Yeah, and maybe we'll have an update, and they'll have matched the fingerprint to someone else. And we can
tell all of you that we were right.
but it's kind of a big thing going on right now, so there is, like, things to watch on it that are recent, because she is getting the retest of this evidence, so.
But I think, you know, when we look at this case, I know that it's, you know, 1996, and, you know, the other thing, too, is, so we have the Susan Smith murder in 94. We have this murder in June 1996. Then we have JonBenet Ramsey in December of 1996. Like, things were just fucking crazy at that time. And I don't know how well detectives and police were doing their job at that time. The Susan Smith, that's a totally different thing. But I just think, you know, that put parents as murderers in people's minds. And, you know, this case happens. And then with JonBenet Ramsey, like, they never closed off the house as a crime scene or anything like that. It's just, it's a lot to think about. So, yeah. Darlie Routier, if you ever listen to this, I think that you are innocent. Don't you think? Okay, like,
I just can't imagine spending, like, being sentenced to death and spending my life in prison over killing my kids if I didn't do it. Like, that's so sad. She lost her kids, and then she had to spend all this time in prison. And if she didn't do it, like, this was ruined. Her life was already ruined when her kids died. And then now it's like you had to spend your whole life in prison and people think you killed your kids. It's super horrible.
And it's probably so, like, I'm one of those people, like, when anything bad happens, I always think, like, if I could have just changed one little thing, the outcome could have been totally different. And I think about if she could have just grabbed the person who was trying to run away. But then who knows? Like, he might have killed her.
Exactly. Or, like, had she, like, not picked up the knife, or had she not, you know, who knows? And it's like her, she could have died. Her, she was close to dying with the slashed throat. Like,
I think, too. In her situation, maybe I would have rather died at that point.
Probably.
Living this fucking life in jail and having everyone in America think that you are guilty.
Yeah.
I don't believe it. And I think, too, you know, the Susan Smith lady, that's what everyone compares this to. She confessed after 9 days.
Yeah, it seems really hard to go this long with, like, not a hint of anything saying that you're guilty. You know, like, I feel like after all the interviews, after all the interrogations, like, something would have made it seem like she, like, seems like she would have confessed a little bit of something, or at least kind of hinted to something, but she's stuck true to this story, and
fucking
that she
OJ didn't do Simpson it. Wrote a book called If I Did It.
Yeah.
Like, people can't keep quiet that long. But I do just think, I think it's important to talk about the fact that they painted her in a certain light, and that is just what everybody believed. You know, like Casey Anthony, we all hated Casey Anthony, but we heard about the constant lies that she was telling police. We don't, you know, this woman celebrated at her kids' graves, and that's their big thing.
She had big boobs and blonde hair. Like, that doesn't make you a murderer.
Your mom has blonde hair and big boobs. Like, she's not a murderer.
Yeah.
And I just think about it, and I think, you know, in this situation, if I was in this situation, what sort of things would they dig up about me? Like I said, they would be putting it all over the news. He was talking to hundreds of women a day. They're not talking about the types of messages.
Yeah, they're not saying,
he's sending them the dancing guy emoji. Like, when they laugh at my story, that's
he's responding
stupid.
To them about a Sunday survey question. Yeah.
He was writing these disgusting questions and asking women to answer that. Like, oh my God. Like, you can twist anything that you want. And I think that this woman is a victim of the media being fucking assholes and turning this against her.
Yeah. I completely agree. I hope that they test the evidence and we get an update, and I hope that she's gets out of jail. I mean, that would be the best outcome.
And can you, like, what, how do you make it up to someone after they've spent over 2 decades in jail? And the other thing is, too, if she gets out, there are still so many people who are going to believe that a guilty woman is now walking free.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure her life's not going to be great when she gets out either.
Nope. So, that's that. That is our second Secrets?
Yeah, Secrets and Scandals.
Is that what it's called?
I think so.
I thought it was called something else. Anyways, hopefully you guys enjoyed it, and that's it.
Yeah.
Darlie, we think you're innocent.
Look up some more Datelines, and there's a whole little docuseries on some channel. I don't know. You could look it up. But guys, it's good.
We don't have all
the get into it. Tell us what you think.
Go to the Facebook group after this episode airs and write out your own shit, and you can disagree with me all that you want. All right, we will see all of you guys next week.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Everybody has a secret.